too many times everyone has a budget cycle and you go, okay, I've got 10% more to spend, so I'm just going to add 10% around the world and see what happens. And we've taken a different approach to that because I think in many cases, it has to be a step function. It has to be a recalibration and then focusing on what's our core driver. How do we make sure that's as strong as it can be? What's our moat around what our core product is or products are? And then how do we continue to grow around that and think about adjacencies? And then how do we measure what's happening there and what types of returns we're getting on that growth profile?
From McKinsey & Company, I'm Sean Brown, and welcome to Inside the Strategy Room. You just heard Zane Rowe, the CFO of Workday, a California-based company that develops enterprise software for managing finance, HR, and planning. Workday's been growing rapidly, and its growth-oriented culture will be a key theme of today's podcast. Zane is now in his fourth CFO role. He previously led finance at VMware, at EMC, and at United Airlines, and in the middle of last year, he took on his current role at Workday. Earlier this year, he spoke with Eric Kutcher, our own CFO, about managing his company's rapid growth and how Workday views its investments in AI. This is part of a series of CFO discussions that Eric is leading, which recently included conversations with the CFOs of Teradata and Palo Alto Networks. We'll include links to those episodes in the show notes. Now, here's Eric.
So, Zane, first of all, just a huge thanks for joining as part of our overall CFO podcast series. Could not be more excited.
It's good to see you. I'm thrilled to participate with you on this conversation.
Zane, before we even get into this, maybe just talk a little bit about Workday. You know, you've been there a relatively short time, but kind of help understand what is Workday and what are the things you're trying to do?
Sure. So Workday was a cloud operator, you know, ready to disrupt and revolutionize enterprise software. And it's known also because of its set of core values. And, you know, those include employees, customer service, innovation, integrity, fun, and profitability. And if you think about that paradigm, you know, one feeds off the other. It's been a company that I've observed for many, many years. I've envied their growth profile and had an opportunity 7 months ago to sign on and be a part of that.
Maybe let's start with a topic you just teed up, which is tremendous growth and what it's like. And especially if you kind of think back to some of your other roles, not every CFO role you've had has been around as growth oriented as this one. Describe a little bit of what it is you spend your time on to help enabling that growth.
Yeah, sure. You know, one of the key elements that I believe at the starting point is really critical for anyone in management, whether you're a CFO or any part of a management team, is really having that growth mindset. And I truly believe if you go in with that mindset and you accept nothing else other than growth, it really enables growth and it really puts everyone in that framework. And, you know, it has a high bar for, you know, what you're about to accomplish. If I were to contrast that to other types of industries and businesses that are out there, it may not be about top line growth like it is for us, because many other businesses, quite frankly, are probably more aligned to GDP growth or other types of metrics. So it's unrealistic to have, you know, double digit high teens growth. But then it's around how do we optimize our current situation? How do we look at our peers? How do we compete? And how do we differentiate ourselves? But as I mentioned, you know, with the current situation at Workday, we've got tremendous opportunity in front of us. You know, we highlighted four areas that we believe are critical to our consistent and continued growth at our analyst day, probably about 6 months ago. That included things like international growth. And I know it can grow sort of either despite economies around the world or because of economies around the world. We're only 25% international. So 25% of our revenue comes from international markets. And for a software company and one that we feel like ours, has a lot to deliver around the world, there's just tremendous opportunity. So we've been very pleased with the performance we've seen, most notably in EMEA, as we've continued to focus in growing in that part of the world. But we're also now more focused on Asia than ever before. And the other part is partners. You know, we've had the benefit of having that close tie with our customers. But obviously, as you scale, and you know, in our case, it's 10 plus thousand customers, you actually need to rely more on partners. And that's not just for implementing, but it's marketing, it's selling, and it's really in the space and the ecosystem that we're in. Whether you're talking about how you go to market with partners, how you think about leaning on partners, especially in the era of AI, it's really a partner relationship that we need to do more and develop. And then, of course, you know, another area close to my heart, and I mentioned, you know, we're less known about, you know, for our financial products, but I think there's tremendous opportunity on financials. We've been building financials for many, many years. In this era of AI, it's not just any one part of your portfolio that you're selling. It's really the platform and the data behind it that's very compelling for customers. So we feel good about those elements. And then last and certainly not least is the AI opportunity that we have. You know, we've been building around AI for about 10 years here. It not only has promise for our company as far as how we operate, but also in how we commercialize AI within our products and our portfolio. So that's the other element that we're leaning into as we think about this growth mindset.
Zane, I feel like you just wrote a new chapter of a book that we published quite some years ago called The Granularity of Growth. And you literally just brought it to life, because the essence of that book, or the thesis behind that book and the empirical evidence, was the number one determinant whether you would grow was the markets you chose to play in. And you have to get incredibly granular. And you did that through a combination of the product market and geographic market. Is you just described effectively if we pick those spots, right, and we deliver to our customers, you're in a wonderful place to be in.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Especially as a public company, you have to think about platforms and diversification in how you play that model. And if you think about growth, it's not just growth next year, but it's sustainable, enduring growth. And in our case, we're tiny in Japan, and yet we know it offers great promise for us. And I'm not naive. I don't expect us to be able to, you know, really focus on it 1 year and have it deliver all kinds of performance the next year. It's going to be a multi-year journey as we continue to build on that.
So there's a philosophy that I've kind of begun to think about and explore, and I'd love to test with you. And it has a lot to do with this growth mindset, if you will. My experience with lots of CFOs is we tend to focus a lot on expense and not enough thinking about investment, because you can argue those are two sides of the same coin. But one is a kind of narrowing, is how do I manage the downside? Right? If I don't want to spend the money, and so therefore I'm going to limit the amount of expense. The other could be a bit more of a growth mindset, where I'm saying, actually, if I'm very thoughtful about how I do make my bets and I make those investments in places, and I am thoughtful about the timeline, horizons it's going to take, it actually opens up new avenues of growth. And I'd be curious, A, how that resonates, and B, how you think about that.
Yeah, it's interesting, because even going back to my airline days, yeah, I was fortunate to be with a team that actually thought about it in reverse order, which is you start with your investments and you think about what's important to me, and then how do I invest in those areas? And then ultimately, yes, you do have to think about expense. But if you know how to reprioritize, and I think it's about consistent reprioritization, and then also understanding what are my marginal costs and where are my marginal savings and what impact will they have in the short term, medium term, and long term, you can actually have those conversations and create a team environment and a team atmosphere at the management level, so that it's not just the CFO owning the expense bucket and then everyone else comes in and said, hey, here's my wish list. And we come back as a finance team and go, okay, you had these 10 wishes and here are five that we can help you with, given the profile of the company. It's really having that engagement model with business teams, regardless of what business you're in, but really thinking about it, but starting with investments and thinking about incrementally, what can we do to drive more? And how do we think about that for the next year, for 2 years from now, 3 years from now? And then you talk about affordability and other sort of cost-cutting measures that you may have to take. But you start leaning in, and as you mentioned, you start on offense, and then ultimately you may get to defense. And then guess what? You have a plan, and a quarter later, you reassess what's working, what's not working, and you have that dynamic conversation with the team, and you bring them in so that you all feel like owners. And it's not just the CFO owning the P&L, but the whole team feels like they own the P&L. And now ultimately, you've got a margin profile that you're typically, you know, optimizing around, or whether it's CapEx and other constraints, but you've got to start leaning in with, how am I generating? I'm in business to drive value. What are our key value drivers? And then back into what you can do on the expense side.
I think that's so well said. You know, you talked about kind of the growth orientation, the opportunities that lie ahead for you and kind of your role in the company. On the other hand, if I remember correctly, the very last of your values was around profitability.
Right.
And so talk a bit about that tension that you face and how do you kind of navigate that?
Yeah, I mean, as we think about profitability, it's key to all the other values because we recognize, and our customers also recognize, without profitability, you can't reinvest, right? So it's this virtual cycle on being able to reinvest in your employees and then back in your customers to drive innovation. I think for us, it's a multi-year approach once again. And anytime you're working with shareholders and you're thinking about margin profiles, anytime you're not maybe growing that margin as fast as they would otherwise like you to, they want to understand, and rightfully so, well, then what are you investing those dollars into? And how do we think about you as a company making those judgment calls on the type of growth profile and the type of investments that you're trying to drive? And I think for us, it's around how do we think about, you know, what are we going to do to drive growth next year and how do we invest into that? How do we support a framework that will be sustainable and durable when it comes to growth? And it's not just incrementally. I think too many times everyone has a budget cycle and you go, okay, I've got 10 more percent to spend, so I'm just going to add 10% around the world and see what happens. And we've taken a different approach to that because I think in many cases, it has to be a step function. It has to be a recalibration and then focusing on what's our core driver. How do we make sure that's as strong as it can be? What's our moat around what our core product is or products are? And then how do we continue to grow around that and think about adjacencies? And then how do we measure what's happening there and what types of returns we're getting on that growth profile? So I feel like it's a very dynamic process. And then it's being transparent, both internally and externally, around, okay, what worked? What didn't work? How are we going to pivot differently? And then how are we going to continue to strike that balance?
Yeah, one of the things I've tried to do, probably not so successfully, is I kind of always ask the question now, what are the five most important investments we have to make? And then I immediately say, okay, great. Let's assume for a moment those are funded. Now I want to talk about all the things that we've been investing in. And if these are the most important, what are the ones that fall to the bottom of that list? And it sort of
exactly. Forces
an orientation towards how do we make sure we're kind of getting not that incremental dollar, but the first dollar at those things, but we can still manage the margin and the cost below it if we need to.
Exactly. Yeah. Another approach I've taken is, okay, once you set aside those five, then you ask people, okay, what would you do if I gave you an extra dollar? And then they'll give you a great idea. And they say, what did I do if I took a dollar away from the rest?
I love that.
And then you strike that balance because everything's a priority to invest in. And of course, taking money out. And it's also a mindset around try things. And then if it's not working out, you know, be transparent around it. And then, you know, allow people to deviate and do other things with those dollars or otherwise give those dollars back to a pool, but encourage people to come up with creative ideas. Because I love the ideation of, you know, teammates coming up, workmates coming up and say, look, if we tried this, let's see what would happen. And if it doesn't work, hey, thanks for trying. You never want people to feel penalized to try new things. And I think that's something within sort of, you know, the corporate culture that you've got to develop, because otherwise it's easier just to say no versus yes.
We call those noble failures, right? We love noble failures, right? You learn something from them. All right, let's switch topics a little bit. One of the things you talked a bit about is the investments you made in some of the financial software and the planning software. Planning is going through a massive amount of change. How did you do planning when you first became CFO? What am I doing today and where is this going?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I'd like to tell myself, although I'm not sure it's completely accurate, that fundamentally the idea behind planning when I was first time CFO was still to take, you know, as much sort of useful data as practical, and then bring that into your models, run out your scenarios, think about the art of the possible, and go through all the motions we just talked about, you know, from a budgeting standpoint, planning standpoint, forecasting standpoint, and then think about how you execute against that, and then analyze it, and then report on it. And I think fundamentally, I'm not sure that that recipe has changed. What's changed is the amount of data that's out there is just tremendous. Now you can process instantly. And I do think having good data is critical in decision-making. And good data, by the way, isn't measured by terabytes, zettabytes, petabytes, or whatever byte you want to talk about. Good data is just clean, good data that can truly have a high correlation with what you're trying to forecast or behaviorally what your business is doing. So I think that the beauty of today is we've got, you know, unparalleled access to compute power and to resources. You can capture more data than ever before. You can synthesize it, analyze it, and have it become part of your models like never before. And then, of course, it's how, you know, how we use that data in a thoughtful way. And not getting, I have seen, you know, a few too many times where people go a little too granular on elements that you do set back and go, okay, did that really matter? And the beauty with AI is you can actually do a fair amount of that and still get your head above water and say, no, this still does matter. And this is why we're forecasting it this way. But it's also understanding and having an audit trail. If you see something in your forecast, why is it driving that change or that shift in forecast? And then what are we going to do about it? But then ultimately, business is about business. And it's about, okay, what forum do we use to analyze that data? How do we execute against that data? And then how do we gather the right people in the right place to make some of these judgment calls and then become a better enterprise because of that data? Not just say, hey, I've got great data. I've got a dashboard that's flashing all kinds of lights, but I'm not actually going to change behavior. I've just now got better tools and, you know, more things on the dash while I drive the car in the same direction at the same speed.
The thing, Zane, that question sort of brings to mind is, what's the impact on your organization, both in terms of the skills you're likely to need, the skills that you may not need as much, and then frankly, how do you go from the people you have to where you need to be as you think about this much more, frankly, data-driven and maybe even automated world?
So I think organizations will be, you know, changing, and organizations should get used to change because it's ever present. Within finance, I've always valued different views, different opinions, and candidly, people from very different backgrounds, because I think it makes you as a team so much more proficient. So one of the elements is, you know, allowing people on your team to continue to learn, you know, whether it's through formal classes or relationships, networking, and other types of opportunities that are out there. And it's having that learning mindset and even offering, you know, opportunities within the company. We've offered a number within Workday on the topic of AI. We've obviously affiliated with a number of institutions and give people an opportunity to really learn about what's changing and what's happening so that you can truly upskill. Everyone can think about skills. You can actually have your company highlight opportunities for you and give you a path to really think about those skills. But I think it's continuously learning. I think it's also bringing in new talent in a variety of areas and encouraging people to work with other groups. You know, you don't have to be an expert in IT, but I would encourage everybody in finance to spend time in IT and to understand what are the dynamics and what are the thoughts that they have, and spend time with your business leaders to understand what products they're thinking about and what advances they're thinking about, and really continue to learn and essentially upskill your behavior, and then actually spend time doing something else. You know, I always feel like there were opportunities I had throughout my career, and some that I did voluntarily and some that I was encouraged to do as far as moving into different parts of the company. And I think it's through those learnings that no matter what role you're in, you'll be better at your job because of something that you've done in the past that you otherwise didn't think you'd get anything out of. And even if it's switching jobs. So it's at many times it's getting out of your comfort zone. That's what we'll be doing organizationally, because especially with AI, it's going to be augmenting a lot of what we do today. And it should be a leverage point to drive more value no matter where you fall within an org chart.
It does feel like there's also this unique opportunity to reach down further into the organization where some people that might not be quite as afraid of the technology
right.
Sort of challenge and say, hey, well, here's the problem. How would you solve this problem?
We have within the finance org, we have every quarter we allow people, and they can just volunteer for it, to rethink what they do or any part of the business using AI and partnering with someone from BT, which is our business technology group. And then they have a readout to me. And it's amazing what a small team can do as far as rethinking a process and adding AI and some of those capabilities. And you should see the excitement on their faces. And like you said, it could be from anywhere within the org. And no matter what level you are, no matter how long you've been with the company, but to take on something like that and the sense of accomplishment they have just rolling out a prototype. And many times we actually will work with them and continue to execute on whatever it is that they've thought up. So it's a very exciting, I mean, I always think, you know, obviously I'm biased. It's always an exciting time to be in finance, because it should be less of those more mundane tasks. Those are the ones that are fairly easy to automate, you know, whether it's between just RPA, AI, and now, of course, Gen AI. There'll be a lot of things that you can do to be more efficient. But now your ability to do that and spend time where you want to, I think, is so much greater.
So I'm going to continue down this question around AI, but sort of switch the topic. You all have published on this question of responsible AI. would just love to hear kind of what were some of the, what were two or three of the big takeaways you took from that? And then would also just love a little bit of guidance you have for other CFOs as to what role do we have kind of in thinking through this question?
Sure. I think it's very similar about transparency, auditability, and openness as it relates to data. As CFOs, we're used to publishing 10Qs, 10Ks, investor letters, and really understanding what went into that and then what came out. And there's this level of transparency around that that's, you know, critical for the role and for the job. And anyone with accounting functions has that same responsibility. And what we found with our research is, as much as there's tremendous excitement around the opportunity that AI presents companies, there's also this disconnect between, you know, not only sort of even leaders candidly not being so sure as to the impact of AI, what AI will have on their roles and responsibilities, but even more so with the workforce, there's this potential distrust in what's coming into AI and what's ultimately happening coming out of the quote black box of AI. So I think it's a responsibility for companies, and I think CFOs have to lead that charge. And feel like the CFO role isn't necessarily to be a part of every part of that, because in many cases, you've got a legal team, you've got a technology team, but to really have a role in making sure that the company understands that there's transparency around it and the employees can embrace it, you know, where it's possible to do so.
I think one of the things that you touched on, especially if I think back to the last two kind of topics, is kind of when you think about the skills, and by the way, where some of those skills exist and how do I reach down in the organization and create the excitement? And then on the flip side, kind of the lack of trust about what this technology means. And some of that is because none of us actually fully, or very, I shouldn't say not, few people actually understand the underlying technology behind some of what's coming on with generative AI. But there's a lack of trust because I don't know what it means for me.
Right.
And so finding a way to get more people to begin to start to use this technology in a way that they are seeing how it enhances their ability to have impact. And I am always struck, there was one of my partners introduced me and I, you know, to this notion of when you're trying to get an organization to move and to adopt and so forth, that he described how you have to get everyone to realize that there's this greater mission that lies ahead.
Completely agree. And I think you don't have to understand all the technical elements, but it's nice to know that I've got someone who participates on a governance board, that there's reliability there, there's trust there, there's transparency there. And then as a CFO, you can say, hey, look, this is auditable. We understand where the data resides. We understand what goes into it. And there's, you know, a level of trust that can be gained from that. But I do think there's a responsibility as a CFO, much like you put out numbers, if you're putting out results or if AI is driving a behavioral change, a judgment change, or any type of change within what you're doing, you need to have some level of auditability going back to it so that, you know, people can be comforted in how you're using it.
Fantastic. Two final questions. You talked about there's no greater time to be in finance, although you said you always believed that. What is it about this moment that makes that statement true?
I think the speed of change is just extraordinary, and the impact some of these technologies can have around the world is always exciting to me. I grew up in Cape Town, South Africa. So I always like to think of sort of, you know, what impact things and technologies, whether my time in the airlines, I loved it because it connected people with technology. I still feel like it empowers those that otherwise don't have those types of advantages to have access to, whether it's money or technology, but it really allows, it's a great equalizer in a way. I think in finance, as a profession, we can do some great things to have a bigger impact on companies and on company performance. And it's driving technology, it's driving change. And I love where the finance role is going, because it's so much more about looking ahead versus analyzing what happened in the past. And that gets me excited.
All right, the last question is, it's about the, you know, the young CFOs, but I'm gonna say, as a four-time CFO, if you had one or two messages to give to your first time CFO, yourself first time, what would those messages be?
You know, yeah, that's a great question. I was not expecting that. I think in general, as a CFO, you've got to strike this balance between leaning in and having your own vision and having your own opinion versus, you know, just accepting and acknowledging what others have given you. And I do think as you get a little bit older in the profession, you start to be able to lean in a little bit more with, well, here's what I think. So you speak up a little bit more in the boardroom and you say, well, I know we're doing this, but being candid about what's working or what's not working. And really, it's finding your own voice.
Zane, I cannot thank you enough. This has been incredible.
Well, my thanks to you. And this has been terrific, Eric. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Thanks for the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us today. We really hope you enjoyed Eric and Zane's conversation, and we've included links to Eric's earlier CFO podcasts in the show notes. We'd also welcome your feedback and ideas for future podcasts. All you need to do is email us at itsr@mckinsey.com. That stands for Inside the Strategy Room. You can also share your ratings and reviews on any podcast player, with many thanks to everyone who's already done so. We really appreciate all of your comments and feedback and encourage you to please keep them coming. If you enjoyed today's episode and you'd like to subscribe, you can follow our weekly series on any podcast player, where you can also access our entire library of nearly 200 previous episodes. We also offer an Inside the Strategy Room podcast collection page available at mckinsey.com/ITSR. And there you can easily browse our prior podcasts across 6 major themes, and also access written transcripts of all of those conversations. Finally, if you'd like to automatically receive our latest publications and insights, we encourage you to sign up for email alerts on our insights page at mckinsey.com, or you can follow us on X at MCK Strategy, or connect with us on LinkedIn at the McKinsey Strategy and Corporate Finance Practice page. Thanks again for listening. We look forward to having you join us again next week inside the Strategy Room.